doing little things. And in women's communities, men have their, you might say, technique. But among women, little things, maybe just a little billy-do, just a little note, the kind they have only in convents. They're always uniform in size, very neat, often have a tint to them, and sometimes just the semblance of a fragrance. Well, you would so want to leave a little note in Sister So-and-so's box. You know, it would do her good, and would, you feel, do you good. Well, if you're going to leave a note in anybody's box and you're going to practice supernatural friendship, you better be very ready to make sacrifice. Now, some people, I've seen this, and I've dealt with too many souls not to know it. Some people foolishly think that they are growing in this supernatural love, which everybody tells them they're supposed to cultivate, by not showing affection, by not manifesting their love. No. Speaking to people is a fundamental way of showing that I care. So it's not that you stop talking, it's that you give up. Now watch this. There's such a thing as counting, and I have done it. Counting the amount of time you spend in a given day talking with certain people. Does this make sense? As over against others, with whom, if you're honest, you'll have to admit, well, I didn't spend either that kind of time or maybe any time. So sacrifice, and I'm just briefly illustrating, it has a thousand manifestations. Sacrifice is of the essence, the giving up of what a person likes. There are certain people that we naturally migrate towards in recreation, in conversation. There are some people we have no trouble writing letters to. Others, it takes all we've got to say anything, and then to keep from saying what's on our minds. Let me suggest four things that need to be sacrificed in the practice of supernatural friendship. First, and most importantly, thought. A religious who intends to cultivate the kind of friendship which the church and religious communities need must be willing and ready, day after day, to sacrifice thinking about certain persons. I don't mean thinking at all, but thinking as much, thinking as often, sacrifice of my thoughts. Secondly, sacrifice of the lips. And this is not easy. There are certain people that I must be willing to give up. Now, don't misunderstand me. He's not giving it up entirely. Just because, I hope nobody is thinking this, just because I'm strongly affected towards somebody in the community, that doesn't mean that I'm going to cut that person off, period. They need to become, you might say, like the heathen or the Gentile to me. No. You don't offend against charity. But that I sacrifice my natural desire to speak with those I love. That's why, by the way, the most popular conversation in the world his soliloquy, because we are so madly in love with ourselves. Talking to people is the built-in manifestation of love. I sacrifice that manifestation not using my lips. Thirdly, the sacrifice of attention. Now, there are various ways we can show that we're attentive to others. And again, as between men and women, women are more subtle, and because of the way the Lord has made women, the maternal instinct, by the way, does not disappear with the vow of chastity. It is cultivated and developed. I watched mothers in three airports yesterday, and with children. Only a mother would do what a mother does to show her love for a child. And I watched the child; they love it. They just smack their infantile lips. There are all sorts of little ways of showing attention to another. The eyes. Oh, how revealing the eyes are. The face. There are some people that light us up. There are other people that turn us off. And finally, the sacrifice of giving. Of giving things, whatever it is, to those that we are specially drawn towards. The amount of what is given, I'm not talking about money, but the object may be very trivial. I cannot tell you how many souls have been harmed in religious life, and we're not yet on carnal friendship, which is where all the harm resides. I'm talking about supernatural friendship. There are things we give to people, but maybe a holy card, it may be a rosary, it may be some object which the person uses, something that he or she can wear or carry, a pen or a pencil. And watch this. The more frequently and regularly the person will use and see and handle the object, the more careful I must be in sacrificing what I give. Am I still making sense? In other words, that I will not forbear getting, but that I will be very prudent in what I give and to whom. I received letters, I hesitate saying this, but I think I should, from major superiors of women's communities that ended with all kinds of X's. You know what an X is? How often I've told priests, if you want to even save your soul, you send that back. Because if she knows you're keeping it, she's in trouble, you're in trouble. All right? We don't have that much to give, but frankly, love doesn't need to give much. Love wants to symbolize itself. And that's beautiful. But let's make sure that our symbols are directed towards people whom we can love supernaturally. And when it comes to exchanging gifts, then you are really outside the field of the supernatural. Because if by selective choice, I regularly, and this is something that a lot of religious have never even asked themselves, what have I given to whom and have received in return? Fifth quality of supernatural friendship. It is supported by the means of grace. Notice I don't say merely grace, but by the means or the channels of grace. To grow in this kind of friendship, the kind that is the bedrock of religious life, takes a lot of grace. That means a lot of prayer. That means that I use the sacraments. That means that I worship before the Blessed Sacrament. And of course, take in my prayer. If the object of my prayer is certain people towards whom I am naturally well affected, well, as Christ tells us, the pagans do that much. He doesn't talk about praying for others, but in effect, I can pray for those that I love naturally or spontaneously, and simply not pray for those towards whom I am not naturally well affected. But if I want to maintain this supernatural friendship, I must live a deeply spiritual life in which grace is constantly received. And finally, one thing that I would recommend to all of you, and it would be a good thing to recommend to those that are, say, beginning their religious life, to model their supernatural friendship on the example of Christ. We speak so casually about imitating the Savior, and surely He is the one that we are to imitate. But what I suggest is studying him more carefully than I think we tend to do, by concentrating just on the way he dealt with others, especially those with whom he was specially intimate and friendly. Use a few examples. Among the 12 apostles, who, on his own testimony, considered himself the most beloved by Jesus? John. From the record, the gospel record, with whom did Christ engage most in conversation? Among the 12, whom?
Peter.
And you know why. Peter always demanded an audience. And more than once, Christ would take, how many did he take with him to Gethsemane? Peter, James, and John. What a lesson in religious life. Among those whom he called, who turned out among the 12 apostles to be his worst enemy? Judas. The last spoken words of Christ to Judas called him what?
Friend.
I cannot think of a more useful set of meditations, and there's plenty there. On the way Christ dealt with his friends, listen to this. Among the 12 apostles, who on Christ's own decision turned out to be the most important? Peter. Among the 12 apostles, whom did Christ alone ever dare call devil? Friendship, when it's supernatural, reprimands, corrects, condemns. Because supernatural friendship loves that person for his or her own best interests. And you are not being most friendly. You are not being most charitable or kind when you are, say, least offensive. There are times when you have to offend. And in fact, if you really love, you'll be willing to offend even deeply. Why? Because you want to offend? No, because you love. So much for supernatural friendship, a wide open subject on which we could spend the next semester. One, carnal friendship, unlike natural and still less unlike supernatural friendship, is the selfish love of one person for one or another. That arises from man's natural desire for self satisfaction. The very word friendship applied to the word carnal is a misnomer because it is not mutual. Even though it may happen that A loves B carnally and B may love A carnally, but then it's not friendship. It is and may be called pseudo-friendship. And in order to be able to say it, I've listened to enough modern love lyrics, have read just enough modern literature on this subject. I frankly believe the word love in modern language is an expression of carnal friendship. It is therefore by its definition self-centered. It is called theologically carnal friendship, not because, note this, not because it is necessarily fleshly or sexual. That's one type of carnal friendship. It is called carnal, which comes from the Latin carol, carnis, in the sense in which St. John speaks of the three struggles that we all have in the world, with the world, the flesh, and the devil. Now, the flesh in biblical language corresponds to self. So it is selfish love masking as friendship. Now, I want to be clear here because by now there's so much, for example, psychology on this subject, so many books, so much literature, which has penetrated also Catholic writing. Notice this carnal friendship can be corporate selfishness. A loves B for selfish reasons, whatever they are. And B loves A for selfish reasons, whatever they are. And they mutually agree, and this can be very deceptive, they mutually agree to be friends, each for their respective selfish reason. I cannot think of a more important thing to look for in prospective vocations, or say in young religious, whether they have a vocation, whether they are willing and able to grow and rise above this carnal friendship. Let's face it, there are advantages to religious life. You get 3 squares a day. You get, by and large, a comfortable bed to sleep in. You have congenial company, and so on. But that should not be the guiding reason why a person is a religious. Carnal friendship, therefore, is the danger that all spiritual writers warn against. Let me say in general, the tendency of all friendships is to become carnal. Note, I am not saying to become sexual, but to become selfish, to use people for our advantage. There are 5 ways that spiritual writers say supernatural, which is laudable friendship, can degenerate into carnal, which means this is the one way to both protect a supernatural friendship and to help a person rise above the carnal to the supernatural. First, the lack of prayer. Since without prayer, there cannot be that supernatural selfless love that Christ in 4 long chapters in John tells us, it's by this that all men will recognize you as my disciples, as a person, and this, never defined by the church, I feel safe in saying, is absolutely true. Any religious who lets up on prayer, their friendship will become more and more carnal. That's why there is more going on in secularized religious communities than ever appears in print. Secondly, lack of prudence. If prudence is absolutely necessary, especially in the manifestations of my affection, to maintain and cultivate supernatural friendship, the lack of prudence. Oh, what a large subject. There are some people you just don't talk to alone for any length of time. And that, by the way, for women religious includes priests. You just don't, period. And when talking to priests, I tell them there are some women you just don't talk to alone for any length of time without endangering your whole priestly commitment. So, Prudence, a thousand ways, this is a course, we cannot go into all the details, you know what I am saying. Thirdly, a lack of faith. It is impossible for supernatural friendship to even exist, let alone to thrive, except in a believing society. Because if I'm to love others and expect them to love me in return, I must rise above my natural tendency to love people who appeal to me. I must draw on the resources of faith. I must see in people goodness and lovableness which reason simply will not show me. I hope you believe me. So we still have the fourth and fifth way in which spiritual friendships can degenerate into carnal. To briefly repeat, the first way is through a lack of prayer. Since the essence of a supernatural friendship is one's relationship to another person on the level of grace, that grace must be sustained through prayer. A lack of prayer or a weakening in prayer inevitably weakens spiritual friendship and causes it to generate into carnal and even sexual. Secondly, lack of prudence. Prudence, as you know, is the virtue by which we choose the proper means to achieve a predetermined end. The end in all friendship should be a closer union with God. The means is the other person who serves for me and I for him or her, the means of reaching a closer union with God. Prudence means, in this case, that I do not assume that either I am completely selfless or especially the other person is completely selfless in our desire for friendship. The prudence should especially be exercised between opposite sexes. But, at least in the United States, there is a growing problem in otherwise spiritual friendships becoming very carnal, even in communities where, of course, they are all of the same gender. Homosexuality is a graver problem in religious communities in America than most people realize. Friendship does not change a person's fallen nature. We have our tendencies, and they must be watched. Third, a lack of faith. You might almost say another term for supernatural friendship is a friendship of faith. There are many reasons, good reasons, why people will cultivate friendship with another person based on enlightened self-interest, but not based on faith. So a lack of faith is a sure means of weakening one's spiritual or supernatural friendship with another person. Everything that helps to sustain the faith always, inevitably, fosters supernatural friendship. There are two more ways in which spiritual friendships can degenerate. Fourth, through a lack of courage. Now, this may seem strange. You wonder, what on earth does courage have to do with friendship? Well, it doesn't take a lot of courage, normally, to develop or cultivate a friendship. It may take a lot of courage to sever one's relationship with a person whom I've discovered to not help me in my union with God. As the expression goes, it's much easier to fall into love than to fall out of love. It takes a lot of courage. And that for many reasons. If I find that my relationship with another person is, if not dangerous, at least is not helpful to my spiritual life, I have to have the courage to tell the person, I like you, you're nice, but just because you're so appealing, where do you begin to tell a person, you're dangerous for me? And the closer two hearts have become entwined, the harder it is to offend someone you love. In fact, I think it takes more courage when duty calls to be willing to offend someone you care for than almost anything else in life. Moreover, depending on who the other person is, my dropping that person's friendship may not only be costly in losing his or her affection, I may inherit that person's, and this is no exaggeration, hatred. There is no hatred on earth deeper than that of rejected love. Number four, therefore, is the need for courage in maintaining a supernatural friendship, and the lack of it tends to reduce even the highest friendship to a carnal condition. And I mentioned before the phone call came that it takes especially a lot of courage to risk the loss of the friendship of somebody who either means a lot to you or who can do you a lot of harm if you lose that person's friendship. And I believe myself, and this is on the level not only of religious life, but say among priests and bishops, it is this courage which is so desperately needed in the church today, to have bishops, for example, or major superiors tell their priests or members, look, you don't do this, you may not do something else, no matter what the consequences are. Rejected love, as I think I mentioned, is in all literature is identified as the most virulent hatred, because it takes a lot of humility on the person who considers him or herself rejected to not turn on the person who had, as they believe, rejected them. And especially when it's in the same community, to foresee living for the next 15, 20, or indefinite number of years with a person whose life I had entered very deeply and intimately, whose confidences I share, whose secrets I know, whose weaknesses I understand. And once before God I realize I must sever that friendship, all I can tell you is, after 30 years in the priesthood, I don't think there's anything more traumatic than for a person to decide, I must give that person up and pay the consequences. Finally, selfishness, or the lack of sacrifice, is the principal cause of the weakening and demobilizing of even the highest friendships, and obversely, sacrifice or selflessness must be constantly nourished in order to maintain friendship at a high level. Thus, if I want to maintain a supernatural friendship with another person, the essence of that kind of friendship is that it is based on authentic, selfless love. Though we're all naturally selfish. My tendencies, that is, the selfish tendencies, remain in spite of the friendship. And consequently, unless I am willing to give up, all kinds of things may have to be given up. I risk the sublimity of my friendship with even the holiest person. My own recommendation, and this I would say for those who are being trained, the young, because they've given up their families, at least the immediate contact with the families, and the friends they used to have. As I mentioned, I'm sure on more than one occasion, I was on the stage for 6 years before I entered the Society of Jesus, had made some wonderful friends. All I know is that in less than 2 months, I got lonely. I thought of all the people I'd left behind. I must say also my widowed mother. And consequently, if a person wants to maintain whatever friendship he or she has already cultivated, they must be also willing to give up, I don't say the friendship as such, but what I call the manifestation of friendship, or the signs of affection. I would almost put it down as a law in the spiritual life. Supernatural friendships must be cultivated by the practice of constant, even daily, sacrifice. The sacrifice first, affecting my thoughts, my mind. Unless I'm willing to keep certain people or a certain person off my mind, except when and insofar as it serves a supernatural purpose for me to have them on my mind. You think too much about anybody. And the highest friendship of a St. Francis and a St. Clair will degenerate. So control of thought, sacrifice of thinking about people that I like. The sacrifice of talking about those people. The sacrifice of talking with those people. And what I didn't realize until I was ordained, the sacrifice of even looking at these people, just being in a person's company. As sisters have told me, she doesn't have to say anything. I just like to be near her. Well, my dear sister, if you want to maintain the high level of the friendship you think you have, you must sacrifice her company. But Father, that's what keeps our friendship going. Not so. Unless you're willing to make that sacrifice, your friendship is suspect. And over the years, because you can't imagine how common this problem is, I think it's almost the built-in liability of community life. We are made to love and be loved. And human love, unless it is very supernaturalized, tends to be more and more exclusive. That's nature. The essence of supernatural love is universality. The essence of natural love is exclusiveness. And consequently, I tell them, maybe the Lord doesn't want you to completely give up this person who has become, if not a danger, at least a distraction for you. But let me tell you, and if I have any authority, I tell them, I want you to do this. For the next month, as far as you can without offending against charity, try not to think about this person. Try to avoid unnecessarily talking with this person. And the hardest for you may be, do not even, oh Father, you don't mean it, pray for that person for 1 month. If you can't take it for a month, for 1 week. And if they cannot make that sacrifice, at least for a time, their friendship is either already degenerated or is weakening and should not be fostered. The sacrifice, for example, of keeping things that the friend has given, and depending on how well the community practiced poverty, it may be a little trinket. It may be a holy card. Ah, but that holy card is from her. And it will always be handled very gently. This is something special. It may be a medal. It may be a clipping. You won't believe this. It can be a strand of hair. Human nature is uncanny. But you wouldn't believe how reluctant people are to give up even a little piece of paper. Absolutely valueless in itself, but a token, a symbol of that person's affection.
This concludes Father Hardin's class on the subject Supernatural, Natural, and Carnal Friendships.